Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broder. We're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing on this fine day?
Oh, I'm good, Chris. I'm moving house pretty soon, and you can probably see in my background there's a lot of suits piled up in the corner. So I feel like I'm in Top Man. I'm in the meeting room in Top Man, just showing off my wares.
Clothes. Yeah, very colourful suits as well. Red, yellow, yellow suit.
Yeah, the yellow suit doesn't get worn very often. That's why it's on the top.
What kind of situation warrants the wearing of a yellow suit?
If you find a possessed mask and you put it on and you run around in a big yellow zoot suit, that's the only reason why you should be wearing a banana yellow suit. Yeah,
I mean, I'm not the right person to appreciate any clothes of style or color, given that I exclusively wear black or navy shirts, and that is pretty much it. But I can learn a lot from you, Pete, in your extravagant clothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of extravagant clothing, I have to talk about Natsuki in your recent Journey Across Japan Redux, part three, Across Japan part three. Natsuki in the first episode is dressed like Beetlejuice, pretty much. I know he's wearing like pirate trousers, but he just looks like Beetlejuice for me.
That is like, I mean, he got that costume at a Don Quixote for like $10, about 1,000 yen. And it was so tacky. And yeah, he lost the pants on day one. It's pretty shocking. I was really worried that we were going to get a backlash. I was worried we were going to get a backlash because that's like a sacred UNESCO World Heritage waterfall when his pants are right there now. Just ingrained sand.
So he falls in. Well, he doesn't fall in. Let's make that very clear. A third party pushes Natsuki into a waterfall, and his pants, his trousers just fall off, and never to be seen again. Where's his pants gone?
It's a 100-meter waterfall. So what I didn't realize is there's a considerable current from the waterfall, right? So he went in, and about 4 seconds in, his pants are blown straight off by the underwater current. And I thought he'd done it deliberately, right? I thought, oh, he's just being funny, Natsuki. He's like taking them off. But he is adamant that he didn't. And when I went back and looked at the footage, like 120 frames a second, slowed down. It was like enhance image 100% and zoom in. And like, the water just takes them off. And there's a point you just can't see them. He goes and they're gone.
The length Chris will go to look at Natsuki's junk underwater. Enhance, computer enhance, remove pants. Unbelievable.
You're zoom in 200%.
But congratulations, man. It was really, I'd seen the trailer, obviously, but I rewatched it, the whole thing, or the first episode anyway, this morning. And just great to hear that theme again. Great to hear that. I cannot believe that Joy's never been to Kyushu before. He's the anime man. Why has he never been to Kyushu?
I know, right? He's been to Yakushima, but he hasn't been to the proper mainland of Kyushu. And I don't know. But Natsuki, and interestingly, Natsuki's never been either, even though Aso is his kind of spiritual homeland where his people, the ancestors of Natsuki, are from Kyushu, but he's never set foot on it. Just because it's kind of like, you know, Kyushu, it's pretty far away. To get to it isn't easy. And like, there's a reason Nagasaki, which is sort of the end destination of the series, there's a reason that none of us had ever been there, because it's just so isolated at the end of Japan. Mm. In fact, the start of the video, there's like a map. I'm like sitting at this desk poring over a map, and like Yakushima is barely on the map. It's like they've had to like extend the map by a little bit around the island just to fit it on.
Right.
So sort of places we went are barely on the map. But it went well. The plane thing turned out great. I think it might have helped cure my fear of flying a little bit. I did get on a plane just 2 days ago for the first time in a year and a half, like a proper plane, an airline plane, not a silly single engine nightmare box plane. And I felt all right. I didn't feel as bad as I used to. So I think maybe the Cessna, it might have done something. Might have had a positive effect.
Oh, well, there you go. I think when you're flying through the sulfur clouds from the actual volcano itself, you're in a situation where it creates terrible turbulence. I mean, that is going to cure you of a lot of stuff, I would say. Because it makes you sort of think, well, look, on the big planes, you never experience such visceral and extreme turbulence.
Absolutely. I mean, because the plane is so small as well, like it's just getting thrown around. It's really quite, it's a bit like a roller coaster, right? We have these momentary drops. You sort of drop half a meter or so. But it was pretty daunting, like opening the window, having all the sulfur gas come in, but went well, pretty happy about it. And currently editing the next one. But like, it's been such an intense week. After I finished editing Journey Across Japan episode one, up until like, it was a photo finish to try and get up on Sunday. The next day on Monday, I uploaded it at 8 a.m. and I'd be editing it until 6 a.m. I didn't sleep at all that night. I finished the video, uploaded at 8, and then at 7 p.m. I went to Tokyo to get the sleeper train for another video that I'm working on with Natsuki, going to the Tottori Sanjins. Because we've talked about it before, right? That Japan is like a mini desert, the Tottori Sanjins, and we've always wanted to go. Tottori is one of the last remaining prefectures ever. I've never been to, and one of the only ways to get there is a sleeper train, or you can fly, which in hindsight would have been a much quicker, easier experience. But it was kind of cool. It was like Murder on the Orient Express, but with Natsuki, and Natsuki got the first class carriage, and I had like a crappy room, and he spent the entire time bragging about his swanky kind of like first class room. Like I went in there at one point, he's just sitting there with a beer in one hand and a pile of ham in the other. It's like what is going on?
But and then his trousers fell off,
and then his trousers were gone.
But every film you should do with Natsuki, at some point his trousers must fall off, and then his trousers fell off.
Well, we got to the sand dune, he did fall over, and his trousers nearly did come off.
To be fair,
the sand dunes are pretty cool. Like they're pretty damn awesome. Like I uploaded a little Star Wars clip to Twitter and Facebook yesterday, reenacting a bit of the trailer with Natsuki. But like they do look like, it does actually look like a desert. If you frame it right, you can definitely trick people into thinking you're in a desert. And a lot of people are like, where are you? In Egypt or Dubai or something? Yeah. No, Tottori. Yeah. But crazy old week. What about yourself though? I know I've just embarked on this huge project with Journey Across Japan. In the same way, you've just uploaded a new podcast file. Your big project.
uploaded 192 kilobytes per second MP3 file. Oh yeah, I mean it's pretty much the same thing, isn't it? Getting on a sleeper train and going to the sand dunes. We released the podcast Bernie, Who Killed the Prince of Soho, this week or last week, and a couple of episodes have gone out, and the media has kind of been all over it. You know, it's been in The Guardian, been in the Daily Mail, The Sun, The Independent, it's an interesting little story about a guy who, beloved by the barflies in the Groucho Members Club in Soho, died under suspicious circumstances a couple of years ago. I knew him relatively well, so I'm pretty regularly. And I just thought his story is a very interesting one. It deserves to be heard by people. And you got guests like Stephen Fry, Alison Steadman, Richard Bacon on there, just talking about his life and how, by the end, he was being pursued by Albanian gangsters in Soho and was on the run from them. And it's an interesting little story. So worth a listen. Don't take my word for it. Take the newspaper's word for it.
You have me at Stephen Fry.
Yeah, exactly. Bernie, Who Killed the Prince of Soho is its name. You'll probably hear a quick advert for it or a not-so-quick advert for it in the break. But Bernie, Who Killed the Prince of Soho. Have a listen or don't. Just do something with your life, goddammit.
That's pretty cool, like a narrative podcast, right? Well, we talk about current affairs every week, but like a narrative podcast seems like a lot of fun. Like actually telling a story, right?
Yeah, I mean, you sort of switched a couple of years ago to start doing documentary stuff, and I didn't realize how satisfying it was going to be. I mean, I've edited it like about what feels like about 6 months ago, but it's only just been ready for release. But yeah, it's been a really strong release, and people seem Fantastic. To be vibing on it.
Let's well done, Pete. Well done.
Cheers,
Everywhere
mate.
From The Guardian to The Sun, Stephen Fry. That is very, you didn't tell me that. That's really impressive. Well done. The way, when you first told me about this project a few months ago, it sounded like a little passion project you were doing in your kitchen. And you were just sort of record. It Rode. Sounds incredible, really. So definitely going to check it out. Definitely going to check out Bernie Who Killed the Prince of Soho. We've got a story this week from, what are you going to say? No, go on.
I was going to say that he's very much the Ishikawa Goemon of Soho, very selfless, stealing from the rich to give to the poor. Because Ishikawa Goemon was not someone I was familiar with, but it's in the first episode of Journey Across Japan, and he sounded like he had an interesting life, eh?
Japanese Robin Hood, yeah. I didn't know that either. I've never even heard this bath, the Goemon Buro bath, right? It's like a hot pot that you might have seen, guys, in Journey Across Japan at the end of the first episode. Natsuki gets in it, and it's like a little bath made out of concrete designed for one person, and there's a fire underneath that heats the water. So it is like a hot pot, and it's Robin Hood's character in Kyoto many years ago tried to assassinate one of the high... a man of high standing, and he got caught and boiled alive with his son.
Oh,
happy
dear.
Days.
Not ideal, is it?
Bit of fun for the opening of the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
A story this week from Yarting from Boston. It says, "Hello, Chris Pete. This is Yarting coming from Boston, USA. I wanted to share with you my experience of getting contact with my lost relatives in Japan and then being forced by them to make a public speech. I'm from Taiwan originally, and I have two aunties who ended up marrying Japanese guys and moving to Japan. I lost contact with them, though, for a while when I moved to America. And I love traveling to Japan, and recently I decided to get in contact with them again by visiting them in Nagoya on my own. They picked me up from the airport, and it was crazy. I hadn't seen them for 15 years. And that night, I finally got to meet my six Japanese Taiwanese cousins who are now in their 20s, just like me. They prepared a fine sukiyaki dinner for this reunion, and everything was so nice and pleasant until when they were about to start the dinner. My auntie suddenly announced very formally in Japanese, 'We're so happy to have Yarting visiting us. Now let us hear a speech from Yarting.' There are a total of 10 people, including my Japanese uncles, around the dinner table, and now they were all staring at me. I felt very confused, awkward, embarrassed, intimidated, and unsure of what to say. A speech? How long or how official should it be? Is this something they do whenever they have a family reunion? Or do they want to hear the long story of why we lost contact for more than a decade? Usually in America, we just toast and cheer and move on. No one puts you in the spot like this. It's also rude to make your guests feel uncomfortable by forcing them to make a speech so suddenly in Taiwanese culture. I really wish they'd warned me. So I was lost for words, trying to come up with something great. The moment felt like forever. Looking around me, I nervously said, 'It's great to see everyone. Thank you. Very happy to be here. Bye.' I thought that was the most comfortable statement to make given the circumstances, but the table was quiet and my aunt, who was translating for me, also appeared a little unsatisfied with my answer. She made a quick speech with a smile as if to smooth over the situation, and I felt really embarrassed. Honestly, I don't know what they thought of me. Did I appear ungrateful because of my underwhelming speech? Am I curious? I'm curious to see if you have been called upon to make some speeches like this to a rather unfamiliar crowd against your will. How important is it to make speeches like this in Japan? Thank you for your comments, guys. Keep up the good work. Yarting. What do you think, Kate? I hate doing speeches like that, like at moments.
Yeah, and also, like, I mean, if you're not expecting to do it, and like, maybe she should have been a little clearer as to what she was expecting from Yarting, to be honest. I'm sorry, Yarting, that you had to go through that horrific situation. I probably would have panicked and wrapped Kanye West's gold digger to everyone. that's what I would have done, just panic. Because I know how I performed at my sister's wedding when I was asked to read a poem out. You know, I've done public speaking before. I've performed publicly to people.
But
yeah, I did it for a living, And I just fell to pieces and I couldn't read out the poem. I was so nervous. It's very, very weird just being put on the back foot like that. Even though I knew the poem was coming, I just couldn't read it properly. I just couldn't perform. Very strange. But I can't imagine having to sort of sum up the last 15 years of your life in, you know.
I mean, what would you say? Like, oh,
yeah.
We should have all got Facebook. We should have got WhatsApp, innit? I mean, in Japan, they have this thing at the end of the beginning or the end of a meeting, like a work party, or whatever. They kind of have a thing called a council where they'll nominate someone, and it's usually the foreign person from my bloody experience, to give their council their sort of impressions or thoughts on the situation. And I have had to do it numerous times, and it's really made me like uncomfortable. Like, I remember my good friend Yuki, I met up with him in Sendai once, and he was at a work party with like 30 of the most powerful men and women in Sendai. And I walked in at the end of the party, and he was like, "This is Chris. He's a YouTuber." And everyone was like, and clapped. And I was like, And then Yuki was like, "Go on then, give him some counsel, give him some thoughts." And I was like, this food looks good. I like Japan. Japan's good.
Nice. I like
Japanese culture. Bye. And it was just like the amount of times I've had to do that on the spot, and it's a bloody nightmare. To be fair, it's the whole having to do it in Japanese for me. If it was in English, I probably could bash out something at a moment's notice. But like, oh man, doing something on the spot in Japanese, I always find it very daunting. Whereas
just four words, she take my money. When I'm in need, just start singing. Just start, get down to it, mate.
Dear, oh dear. Well, speaking of awkward situations, there's been a news story this week in Japan that's actually quite close to home. Just north in Morioka in Iwate Prefecture, a 9-year-old boy hijacked a car and crashed it into some traffic. Someone was driving down the road, down a main road, and they looked up and a car went past with like a child just behind the wheel, like a 9-year-old boy. Mm. Yeah. And they sort of like rubbed their eyes. The sort of standard scenario. We're like, what is that? Looked again, and it was just genuinely a 9-year-old boy. And apparently a kid had stolen his mum's keys, his car keys, hopped in the car and drove off down the road at 40 kilometers per hour. During heavy traffic. Yeah.
Nice.
It's ridiculous. And he unfortunately did crash into someone, but neither the boy nor the unfortunate person that collided with the boy have suffered life-threatening injuries. They're okay. It's more just the shock of the boy hijacking the car. Like, there's not much more to the story than that. Why did he hijack the car, Pete?
Whenever there's some kind of horrific thing that happens in America, the right always blame violent video games. I am blaming the Japanese TV show Speed Racer for this. It's a little boy rides around in a car really, really fast, and that kid has grown up on a diet of Speed Racer, a diet of Mario Kart, and he just wants a piece of the action. It's completely understandable for me. Ban this sick filth.
I remember when I was in the UK a few years ago, I'd parked my car up and I'd rented a car, and it was a nice car. I think in Canterbury or somewhere, and like some kid came up to me. He must have been about 12, 14, and he kind of complimented the car. I was renting like a BMW because it's the only time I can drive a fun car. And he was like, "Oh, that's a nice car." I was like, "Yeah, it's good. I'm renting it. It's not mine. I'm not that kid." And then he was like, what are you doing? And he's like, "I'm on the run." I was like, "What? On the run from what?" And he's like, "It's like Maze Runner." And I was like, "I don't know what that is." I later learned Maze Runner involves some kids in a maze. I don't really know the story. But this kid had like watched this film Maze Runner and decided to just reenact the plot in his real life. And it was really awkward. Yeah. We had to sort of like, have you got a phone? Is it time to call your mum now? And like, it was really surreal. So when I'm thinking back to that experience and now thinking to the 9-year-old boy who crashed a car and stole a car, it's the same. It's definitely the same.
It is the same. It is the
kids
same.
It's playing big end, isn't it?
It is,
terrible,
yeah.
Terrible.
Oh, well, never mind. I feel like when I'm doing my like little driving lessons with my partner, I just do sort of think that I feel like a boy who's not allowed to be, who shouldn't be allowed to do this sort of thing, quite frankly.
Does it make you angry knowing that legally you can't drive alone in a car because you haven't passed a driver's license? But this 9-year-old boy had the thrills of driving a car alone.
Yeah.
40 kilometers
singing,
down the road, no one
singing
in the
along.
City.
He's probably using his phone at the same time, probably on his iPad playing Candy Crush or whatever kids play, Roblox.
Exactly. But what a story. Once we get an update there, I'll definitely look into that. We had a story as well last week, I think. I think it was a week or two ago. A guy went down to the kitchen, like you do, because I think he heard something in the kitchen. This guy in Osaka. He was asleep. It was about 3 or 4 a.m. He heard some sort of rustling noise in the kitchen. He went downstairs, and there was a guy at his desk eating a lasagna, you know, like you do. It's just a stranger. He never met him. Guy eating a lasagna. And then a few moments later, he sort of fell over and died. And it was the most one of the weird stories we've had. But it reminds me of another story a few years ago where this boggles belief. A homeless woman who snuck into a man's house and lived undetected in his closet for a year was arrested in Japan after he became suspicious when food mysteriously began disappearing. Police found the 58-year-old woman hiding in the top compartment of the man's closet and arrested her for trespassing. This woman had been like hiding in this man's house for months. Sorry, a year, an entire year. She'd been hiding in the house, in the closet.
Mm.
And when he went to sleep, she'd sort of sneak down out of the cupboard and eat various foods. I'm impressed that it took him a year to work that out. My fridge, if my things just disappeared out of my bloody fridge, I'd know about it pretty damn fast. But but basically, the guy, he installed some security cameras that transmitted images to his mobile phone after he got puzzled about the food disappearing. And one of the cameras captured someone moving inside his home after he had left. And so he called the police, thinking, oh, it's a burglar. When they arrived, they found the door locked, all the windows closed. They searched the house, checking everywhere someone could possibly hide. And when we slid open the shelf closet, there she was, nervously curled up on her side. Apparently, the woman had no place to live and had snuck into the man's house about a year ago when he left it unlocked. The closet is part of a Japanese-style room, one of several rooms in his one-story house where the man lived alone, or so he thought lived alone. But the police investigated how she managed to get in and out of the house unnoticed, and if she'd taken anything else. She'd moved a mattress into the small closet space and apparently even took showers, calling the woman neat and clean, the police said. What do you make of that, Pete? Another story there. I mean, people do leave their houses unlocked here, so I'm not really surprised by that.
And also, I think with her, she probably would have got away with it if presumably this man's routine would have been broken up by the pandemic. So houses in Japan aren't big, and he must have had one hell of a closet, or he must just not, you know, his clothing must be like just completely uninteresting to him. He must only have a rotation of like a few shirts and trousers and never deviate from that, because it's crazy that this woman managed to hide out of someone's cupboard for that amount of time.
I mean, the hiding bit is pretty impressive. I'm not surprised that she managed to slip in and out of the house, though. Like, it's quite common here for people to leave their doors unlocked, particularly in the countryside.
Right.
Like, my foreign friends that kind of worked as teachers in the town where I used to live in Yamagata, they all left their doors unlocked. And I was like, is this safe? Is this normal? And they're like, yeah, sorry about it. I was like, I'm not going to leave my bloody door unlocked. But so I'm not surprised about that bit. But to go unnoticed in someone's house, to shower in the house, to eat the food, it is awfully like the film Parasite in hindsight, isn't it? Is that where they got the idea from, Greg?
Maybe a little bit.
Stole the plot, didn't they? Crikey. Yeah. Don't know what to make of it. But if you've got a story of someone sleeping in your closet, let us know at broadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back with the fax machine right after this break.
Bernie Katz was fun. He was kind. When he walked in, the room just lit up.
And there was something magical about this young man that just had a glint in his eye, that didn't give a shit about anything, but loved everything.
My first impressions were of a huge, vibrant and outgoing personality, all hugs, grins, extravagant language and wild attire.
Always in a leopard skin jacket, whirling around like a windmill. And it's just a character. I don't know if those people exist anymore. They're sort of dying out. Everything's changed.
It is a bank holiday weekend in London, the late summer of 2017. The streets around Kentish Town, just north of the city, and halfway towards Hampstead Heath, are unusually quiet. That evening, in a small, converted flat, just a 15-minute bus ride from King's Cross Station, Bernie Katz, pocket-sized and long-standing front-of-house manager of London's Groucho Club, is found dead by his landlord.
I said to him, what happened? You know, and he said, we are not talking about it. And yes, there have been the rumours. We've all heard. I mean, what did I hear specifically? That he was murdered.
His relationship with his father was so toxic. He hated the idea that his son was gay. His right. dad was a proper gangster. Bernie came down, there was a car far from. Guy blows his dad's head off.
They were all part of the same fetid, seething, self-referential nest of vipers that I think the Groucho had become.
Was Bernie depressive? I think yes. When alone, a condition he rarely sought, he had demons that flew about his head.
I get a call from Bernie and he is in £20,000 worth of debt with the Albanian gangsters in Soho. We all collected and paid the debt.
The way that the Albanians operate is very, very peculiar because they did not operate like any other mafia in Europe.
I've never been able to establish exactly what happened and why, but whatever it was so wrong.
Bernie, who killed the Prince of Soho? Listen now. A Stack production, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back. What do we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson?
We've got a message from George from Florida. Actually, it might be Jorge. Let's go with Jorge. Hello, Chris and Pete. Hope you're doing well. This is Jorge, or possibly George, from Florida. Long-time listener and viewer, but first-time writer. Thank you to the both of you for all the amazing work you do and how much better you make our lives with our energy, with your energy. Yes, even you, Chris, an all-round astounding sense of humour. There we go. Mr. Pete Coolish Donaldson, I first saw you in Chris's Sapporo Snow Festival video and immediately thought, what an intimidating-looking gent.
Definitely.
He looks like he, yeah, definitely. I'm a real hard ass, mate. He looks like he might be a member of the Yakuza. Little did I know you would turn out to be one of my favourite Abroad Japan guests and one of the most encouraging, friendly, and lovable internet personalities I follow. Come on, Jorge, possibly George. I'll have a bit of that. As for you, Chris, I know you've heard this a million times before, but you're such an inspiration. I also have dreams about becoming a filmmaker like you someday, and specifically a screenwriter. As it stands, the Abroad Japan channel and podcast have gotten me through some of the most difficult years in my relatively young adult life. Oh, Jorge, come Come on now. What a lovely message from Jorge. As for questions, I have one for Chris. If you had the chance to produce your first feature-length film as an established director in Hollywood in the near future, what genre do you think you'd tackle first? What kind of movies do you see yourself making? And more importantly, would Natsuki, Ryotaro, Pete, and the gang have cameos in them? All the best in your future projects and efforts. And sorry for the terribly long message, you absolute legend. I mean, what a message. What a complimentary message. I see why that one got through the sieve of content.
The sieve of content. Mm. I mean, that's a big question. I think Natsuki would definitely be in it. I'm sure we could stick Pete in somewhere. He can actually act. He can act, can't he, Pete?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I'll have a crack, mate. Yeah. I'll have a go. I'll stink up the screen. No problems.
Have you in there as a villain? But I don't know, really. I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, I watched a really good film yesterday, actually, called The Girl with All the Gifts. I highly recommend it. It's a zombie film.
Okay.
I don't really like zombie films because they're usually not that good, apart from films like 28 Days Later or Shaun of the Dead. But The Girl with All the Gifts, it's a British zombie film, similar to 28 Days Later and Shaun of the Dead. But it's just got a lot of thought put into it. And I think it's quite a small budget, $4 million, but they had like Glenn Close in it and they've got some great cast, but like it's just really well thought out film. But I don't know, really. I honestly don't know where I'd begin. Probably sci-fi, neo-noir, cyberpunk idea, but like it's too early to sort of talk about that, really. It all has to start with an idea or a premise, doesn't it? A log line. Got to think of sort of a key premise. Any ideas, Pete? What'd you do your film about?
What if your hands were sausages? There you go. That's what you got. That's what I got.
That is the trick, though, isn't it? You got to think, what if?
Yeah.
What if I could like open like my cupboard and there'll be money in there every day or something, like a weird what if scenario? Sure how the whole sausage hands would turn out. No. Could be quite good, actually. Could be good.
I guess like Edward Scissorhands is very much a story about a man who cut hair, but he had scissors for hands. What about Natsuki, who cuts hair for a living, but one day wakes up and he's got sausages for hands and he can't use the he can't cut hair.
Edward Sausage Hands. I like this.
Yeah,
and he slams him on the barbecue and eats his fingers. I think it'd be a pretty short-lived film, to be honest. God. We've got one from Tony. He says, "Hi, Chris, Pete. Love your podcast. My plans for Japan were cancelled this year, so I've been making multiple travel plans to explore the many prefectures, cities, and such at different times during the year. Maybe in 2022, I'll take 6 weeks off just to travel Japan. Nice one. In your opinion, is there a certain season or time that tourists should visit certain tourist attractions? Are there places that you should visit a specific season versus the other parts of the year? Cheers, guys. Tony. Also, you should do more drone videos of Japan's countryside. They're very pleasing to stare at and lose yourself." Very good, Tony. We'll do that. There's quite a lot of drone footage of Journey Across Japan 3. So
there is.
Check that out. Yeah. I don't know, really. I'd say Japan in August is a write-off. Japan in July, kind of a write-off as well. September to November is pretty nice across the board. Mm. Sapporo, very cold in winter, but also if you like snow sports, it's cracking. In summer, though, it's perfect. It's like the only place in Japan in August that's bearable and you won't melt. Any thoughts, Pete? Pete knows all too well not to come in the rainy season. He did that once.
I absolutely messed that up, to be honest. Didn't really think about it.
Rainy season is June, right?
Best month. Yeah, October is the very best month to do it in. There's Halloween, everyone's having a lovely time. It's not too cold, not too warm. Oh, it's blooming great. I love it.
Yeah, and also don't forget in September there's typhoons to deal with as well. A good friend came over a few years ago and it just got intense. That's September to October. In fact, the second journey across Japan last year, Escape to Fuji, the weather was consistently shit because we were bombarded by like three typhoons and it's just lots of wind and rain, basically. It's not overly fun, but it's cool if you want to experience a typhoon. It's just wind and rain. Especially the UK.
That's all it is. We've got a message from Sophie. Hello, Sophie. Chris, Pete, it's me again. The one from the north of England, God's own country, Yorkshire. As a long-time listener of your podcast and since travelling there frequently, since I live next door in Korea, I couldn't help but notice how easy it is to offend my fellow Japanese friends. It seems as if Japanese people will openly critique their own government and people, but they don't lightly agree with opinions from outside their culture. Interested to hear if you felt this yourself too. You too, Pete, if you've experienced it, keen to hear about your awkward situations and how you dealt with them. As for me, I recently broke up with a Japanese gentleman. Lovely guy. No need to cry. I don't know whether she's talking to him or us. This question came to mind and partly became the reason why we broke up, but I always felt an overwhelming pressure to pay attention to every syllable that escaped my mouth in case it offended him. I have limited experience with Japanese guys, though. I've heard this is quite representative of the general population. Anyway, if you could shed some light on my discovery, it'd be most grateful. If Chris or Pete ever head up north, now Manchester, the pint is on me. Sophie, pints up north are cheaper. You should be more than one pint, I think. The pint is on me.
It's very true.
But have you ever sort of experienced breaking up with a Japanese gentleman, Chris?
Takes me back to 3 years ago.
Takes you back. Takes you back.
Takeshi Sato, the love of my life. This sounds odd. I've never really heard of a Japanese person get insulted by someone critiquing their government or people. I mean, people here, nobody likes the government. It's like, I've been here, 9 years, and nobody's ever said, I like the government. Like, it's well known that everyone complains about it. I think, you know, I did that video a few weeks ago, 12 Reasons Not to Move to Japan. And there were a few Japanese folks that said, that clearly didn't understand the video or what I was saying, and they just sort of told me to fuck off and that I was rubbish and how England's shit and I should go there and stuff. But, like, you know, I generally know. I think it just sounds like this guy sounds quite dodgy, to be honest, if he's that weird, if he got that offended all the time. Like, it's always a red flag when you have to be careful over every syllable you're saying around your partner. That's usually a really good reason to get out of a relationship like that. So you did the right thing, Sophie. Other than that, no other thoughts, really. I mean, Natsuki, dating Natsuki, he would never get offended if he critiqued Japan. Ryotaro. Yeah, I can't think of anyone, really. It's just sounds like an odd chap, to be honest. Doesn't it, Pete? What do you think?
Well, look, I mean, everyone's different, and that's probably, I think sometimes when people are careful about how they talk, it's not necessarily even about the person that they're going out with or regarding in that sense. I think sometimes we can sort of be, we can make our own cages to live in, can't we? You know, we can be too over careful, over cautious. I know I could do with probably being a bit more careful with how I speak to people. I think everyone could.
I mean, going back to the whole critiquing the other people's countries and whatnot, though, I do find I get weirdly defensive over the UK sometimes, though, when I'm here and people say bad stuff about the UK. I mean, most British people, we're very open about insulting our country. But, like, I don't know, I get weirdly defensive sometimes, especially when it comes to British food. I don't think British food's that bad, is it, Pete? It's not that bad.
All the stuff that came from elsewhere is very good. Our own meat and potatoes, not so good. We do have a nice mix these days.
To be fair, we have just plagiarised and stolen every cuisine in the world. But I don't know. Maybe you do get weirdly defensive about your own culture sometimes. But generally, I just think it sounds like it's good that you got out of that relationship. Yes. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into Agony Aunt Pete and Chris. We'll be back in the next few days for the next episode, guys. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, enjoy the rest of your week and keep an eye out for Journey Across Japan Season 3, Episode 2, coming out in the next few days. But for now, have yourself a good one.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.